Good morning. Today is a Monday. It's wet, it's cold. Brian Stevens is with us this morning. So you bumped the chief out again, huh? You must really like the water that you get when you come here.
I appreciate the water. He's down at the college that I was today with the Basic Police Academy helping conduct.
Taking classes again?
You know, after that many years.
Yeah, ongoing training?
No, he's helping out with their command inspection this morning. So.
But you didn't totally deny that, did you?
Hey, he's a lifelong learner just like me. So
yeah, there he is. I think we all are, aren't we?
We should be.
Yeah.
If we're not.
Oh, boy. Let's see if we can find something here that's kind of halfway possible for you, huh?
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let me double check. Okay. No. It said deviled, but I was thinking maybe deviled egg, but it's not deviled egg. It's some other stuff. But I'm in the food category. Pot shot. That's kind of copish. Why do we say someone takes a pot shot at somebody or something? It's food related.
Oh.
Here's your clue.
Yeah, well, that's it's got to do with donuts. That doesn't really even do with
donuts.
Pot,
pot shot. What is that playing to people's
food.
Stereotypes?
Yeah.
You hot dog?
Know, it's out there. I might as well just embrace it, right? Yeah, that's a good one. Probably thinking like medieval times because of the big heavy pots they had to have over the fires, but I'm not sure where the shot would come from unless it's some type of food that possibly, or beverage.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for the clue.
Well, I don't know. I haven't read it yet.
Well, that's a good point, yeah. I was thinking what could blow out of the pot while they're cooking and then
yeah.
Make a shot, man.
So. Okay. Medieval sportsmen developed elaborate rules that governed hunting. By the time chivalry began to decline, such regulations had become well-entrenched customs. There were seasons for various game animals and birds and restrictions designed to give quarry a sporting chance. A householder who simply wanted something to put in his pot tended to ignore the rules of good sportsmanship. Boy, doesn't that sound normal, huh?
It does.
Yeah, okay.
Some things never change.
Such a fellow seldom hesitated to shoot a young animal or one out of season. Sometimes fields were baited so that birds could be slaughtered from ambush. All rules were thrown aside when a person was shooting for the pot. Okay. Hence, that's a fancy word for today. Hence, we call a less than sporting attack upon a two-legged target a pot shot. So you want to talk about what's in the news this morning or not?
Oh, I can't. Maybe, as much as I can.
Let's see, the shooting, was it New England, Winston, or the rap concert thing? And there was a rush, and somebody, they heard shots in the background, and we would see we've got the kid on the Grizzlies taking film footage with showing himself with guns.
Firearm, yeah.
I guess those are probably good starting spots. Are you constantly amazed about that kind of stuff, what people will do? Thinking that there's no repercussions for their actions?
It's, you know, I find the sporting arena interesting just because I don't know that we prepare these young men and women for the limelight, for the money, for what they have to do to represent their team, their teammates, the city that they play for. I don't think this for that gentleman is probably career-ending. I think he's, 19 years old, 20 years old. I think it's a lesson he's going to have to learn the hard way. I think I was watching ESPN last night, and Jalen Rose was talking about how when he was a young basketball player, he made missteps. And you can learn from those, and you can still be successful. But I wonder if we're really doing justice by them and preparing them for what they're about ready to enter into.
Oh, I would suspect, I mean, what is it, the National Felon League?
That's you hear that called a lot.
Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah.
You've got that. A lot of these kids, you know, this is their ticket out, and they've kind of been treated differently all through school.
Yeah,
so that they feel like there is a separate set of rules. I found it intriguing yesterday. There was a comment, Mark Jackson, in the Warriors game, but also in the whatever the other one was that we were kind of watching at the end there. Had talked about you got to get away from those people. You got to get supportive people, not others. And I thought so many of these folks come from that environment that family members are not supportive.
True.
They are the ones that are promulgating some of this stuff to, you know, look bad so they can brag and stuff. Do you run into that much here? I suppose in the drug culture that we have here, you run into an awful lot of that. Maybe not firearms, but that continual environment.
Generational type behaviors that you see that are passed down. Yeah, we do. Definitely in the drug environment, that's a big one. But just in the household, the way the household is ran in general can have an effect on children and how, you know, they then progress through school and progress through society, and their view on society has been skewed and scarred already. So, you know, that's where I think our high ACEs scores for California come out of, is just a lot of the trauma that these, you know, young children are being put through. And trauma comes in many forms. It doesn't have to be as extreme as, you know, gun violence in your home or domestic violence, but it can, even the small trauma adds up over time and creates a circumstance where we have a, you know, an individual then who has to grow out of and find a different path out of that to find their way in society.
Well, and to break what feels normal.
Yes.
I think that that's probably one of the challenges. And, you know, we can use the druggies because then it's a little less personal. For those that, that's the environment they grew up in. That's who all their social contacts are. That may be how they found their spouse. Okay, now you're saying turn your back on that one? Walk away, leave the area, do something different. There's a whole lot of challenge in that.
Yeah, you know, the other area we see it in is, you know, when we're dealing with members of our community experiencing homelessness, there is a portion of that community who, for generationally, has been raised in Greenbelts. They were born there. They were raised there. They may be third generation family X that has been dealing, we've been, you know, interacting with in the Greenbelts and in camping situations. And they know no better. That's what they want. That's how they were raised. That's their norm. And how, you know, trying to get them then to see there's other resources out there. There's other options for you. It's hard because it's ingrained. Like you said, it's the way they were raised. It's,
well, or to see that it's a advantage or a benefit rather than just different. I mean, that's part of the game also. KINS, News and Information Times, 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian Coconut Water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's Homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Stevens, the assistant chief for the city of Eureka. Not teaching today, not learning today. He's with
always
us
learning.
Today. He's with us today.
I know what a pot shot is.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah. And you know when to duck now a little bit too.
That's right.
Or that they're looking for ducks, one or the other.
Yeah.
When you get into this arena, Brian, where there's, you can see that there's trouble. And you have empathy, maybe not sympathy, because that's kind of a dangerous slope to start sliding down. Is there receptivity for the messaging, for the words, for things of that nature? Does there tend to be hostility, particularly with the youngers? I mean, the ones that we're talking about, maybe the 15 to 25s. Or do they know better, like, you know, they're invincible and they're going to keep doing whatever it is and they just caught a bad break because you guys found them?
I think you hit the nail on the head across the spectrum of responses that we get when we're dealing with that, let's say, that age group. And I think if you've ever raised kids, you've ran across each one of those emotional points in their lives as well. So, yeah, there are times that the empathy is there. And we can show that, and it's receptive, and maybe the circumstance is right for them to receive that and understand it and hear it. We also run into times where absolutely not. You're right. I am an invincible 21-year-old that just unfortunately had a rough night at a local establishment and crossed paths with you tonight. And tomorrow's a new day for me. And no words of wisdom you could give them that time will actually resonate. But we also have people come back years later and say, because of you, because of that contact, because of me being the way I was towards you and you taking time to work with me, you saved my life. And
all you need is about one of those a year, huh?
You know what? You do. You work for those moments that you actually know that you've made a difference, but you also work knowing that everything you do makes a difference. You just don't know about it.
Yeah, you won't get that feedback down the road. So with the multi-generational, I know you guys have got some of the psychiatrists. Who's driving with you? With the new program that...
Jacob is a licensed clinician, a supervising managing clinician for the city of Eureka.
Okay, well, clinicians also are pharmacists.
He has a background in...
mental health?
Mental health, yes. Okay. That's where it came from, yes. So
glad to keep extending that phrase. What does he talk about as far as trying to break this multi-generational, whether it's drugs or booze or... I guess burglary or, sleeping outside or homeless, shelterless, whatever the current vernacular is. What does he see? Is there a commonality there?
For us to try to break that cycle is the consistency. It's so we seek out people that need help. We run into people or we're called to people that are in crisis. And then it's being able to get them out of that crisis mode and get them the proper case management. So he's hired two case managers right now that work under him, and case management, the ideal case management is contact every 1 to 5 days after you've had your initial, you're in crisis, I'm here to stabilize, help you get back on your feet, and then that consistent case management, contact, check-ins, to keep people on the right path, be able to maybe head off some of those crisis moments, answer questions, and then try to continue them down the path to more stabilization, longer-term stabilization.
So is the goal directed by him or by the folks that you interact with?
Both. I mean, there's times it's both. Well, we have, due to that constant contact our missed officers have had in the field, we try and try. You want to go to waterfront recovery, let's say. You want to go. No, I'm not going to go. You give them your business card, and all of a sudden one morning you come to work and they're at the front door of the PD. They've hit rock bottom that day.
There's somebody there.
And they say, I need to see Officer so-and-so, and they walk outside and they say, I'm ready to go. And that's where, some of the things we've done with Measure Z, some of the stopgap funding we've gotten from that application, we try to take those barriers away right then. So we take them, put them in a car, we take them straight to waterfront. If they, maybe they're out of medication that they would need to stay in there for 90 days or other things that they, small things they need. We try to get those things set in place so when we drop them off for that recovery period, they have the best chance of success.
And you hustle them down there as quick as you can.
We take them right then and there because any delay, they see a friend, they get their next hit, whatever it is, that mind could be changed that quickly. So
most of the folks that are reaching out for that, is it drug and booze? I know that substances, I guess, is the... All-encompassing.
For waterfront recovery, that is substance abuse treatment. But we also have clients who have mental illness who are up and down. They have good days, bad days.
Either in their lucid moments, come and reach out?
Yeah, they'll either come reach out to us, they'll find one of the homeless outreach workers maybe that are down in St. Vincent de Paul every day that they've had some type of relationship with, at least make some contact somewhere in the chain of availability, and then... the messages get relayed back and forth to where we need to do and who needs to be involved to get them to the right place.
Now, there's one school of thought that says there's not enough services. There's another school of thought that says they're all over the place. What is the reality that's out there? If one of these folks is reaching out, are there enough people that they can reach out to find somebody relatively quickly?
That's a tough question. I think if you look at the number of... potential clients in Humboldt County compared to the number of clinicians in Humboldt County. I heard the number at a meeting this weekend, but I think it's like it was outrageous. It's like one client or one clinician for every 170 to 100 clients.
So they all can't come in at once anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's tough to manage that. But I think you're right. I think there are some resources, plenty of resources, but I also think there's not the right types of resources necessarily to fit everything.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Stevens from the Eureka Police Department, the greater city of Eureka.
Yeah.
Oh, gee. So now that you're kind of in the senior management position and you look back at how things have been done over the years, is the trend a positive one? For breaking some of these cycles that we were talking about, either multi-generational or folks that need assistance. I know partnering with DHHS, or County Mental Health, I guess, mm-hmm. is the old-timey name. Is that bearing fruit?
Yeah, I think so. So things have definitely changed. Things have been positive. I mean, you look at from never addressing from a street level from law enforcement, the mental health and addiction issues in the city was always, we arrest people, they go to jail, we take people to mental health, we don't have any follow-up.
Well, and that's kind of what the culture was like, too, yeah, with well, the previous folks in mental health.
Yeah, and that was our avenue. Our avenue was take them to the hospital, mental health hospital, and drop them off. You know, now COVID changed that process by having to take them to the hospital, which created a whole new problematic issue in trying to deal with you know, having clients in the hospital on holds when more than half the beds most of the time are the clients waiting to be transferred to SV versus
and beating up the
you
staff
and I. Yeah, and all those issues. And yeah. Then you and I having medical emergencies in the right. waiting room because we can't get to a bed.
Now, is that still the case?
Still the case.
Even though COVID is gone?
Yep. So they have kept that process in place.
Who they?
County?
Well,
I think it's, the county, I think it has something to do with the way that medical treatment needs to be or the way the clients need to be evaluated before they come to the mental health hospital because they don't have the same they have to have labs, they have to have other things done. They're keeping this in place with having all that done at the hospital.
Some of the chemical tests and stuff.
Yeah, so okay. There's some new laws or some regulations that came out about that. There's better ways. We've all talked about this. There's better solutions. It's just how do you get, you know, Providence, how do you get county mental health or behavioral health on board? And how do we come up with a combined plan to come up with a location where they're not being staged in the ER to wait transfer to Semperviron's or being staged at a different location that's more conducive for them? If you're in a mental health crisis and you're in an ER where there's nothing but beeping of equipment and people running around, that is not a place to get stabilized. And the danger to the staff is outrageous. So,
yeah, I would think that there could be some kind of a temporary, I mean, as quick as some of these metal buildings can be built. Okay, so the parking lot disappears at Semperviron's. And okay, fine, gone. Pull those things out. You got a spot now, and then set up whatever you need to set up there and do it there so you're not endangering so many other people. But I'm sure that that's already been thought of and dismissed.
I know there's a lot of conversations taking place. I know everyone wants a better solution, so I know they're working toward it. It's just...
Is there agreement on what a better solution is?
An agreement? I don't know. But I can tell you that the thought process of having a centralized location for this initial intake and stabilization is more ideal than an ER at a hospital. So
Napa still has the mental health or the mental hospital, right?
Yes.
So if we exclude them, what does Sonoma County do? What does Shasta County do? What do some of those other areas that are in our neighborhood do with their situations? Because I would think that there's got somebody's got to be doing it better.
Yeah, unfortunately, but I don't have the knowledge. I don't know what.
You don't travel to Santa Rosa?
Not for that reason. I have other people that have researched that, but it's not been a...
Other people?
There are people who are actively involved in our new care program, both from inside the PD and outside, who are researching constantly for programs that work and how they work, what kind of mistakes they've made, where they've had learning lessons. Because every time we try to implement something new, such as this care program, it's not new as into the country. It's not new into the region. This region, yes, the greater California, no. But other people have already walked this path and learned a lot. So let's not make the same mistakes. Let's try to get ahead of that. So I apologize for using the word my people. There are people I entrust to do
perfect.
This research. and I appreciate the research they do and try to get us ahead of the curve.
There's only one guy that isn't your people in the department. So, yeah, they're yours. Yeah. Is there a willingness to embrace the new ideas or a desire? I mean, because whenever there's change, that's uncomfortable and... let's just say positions of power and influence might be diluted.
Yeah. So I will tell you that from a city standpoint, yes, the willingness to accept and try to continue to find better solutions is there. From inside the department, absolutely. Because we don't want cops having to go pick up thousands of pounds of trash a year. We don't want cops having to sit at the ER and ensure the safety for hours a day of the clients and of the person, the hospital personnel and other people who come to seek treatment. And with the changes we've made internally, we have cops now that, and the care team who are taking that load off of the officers who are already busy. We're already handling a lot of calls. If we can hand off things to a more appropriate person or a more appropriate entity to handle on the street, that will resolve less time for us to be involved and potentially the chance of me having to go back. The cops are all for that and support that. We'll be there to help stabilize, be there for security. But if I can walk away from that knowing they're taken care of and I don't have any paperwork to do and I can go on to my next thing, for a patrol cop, that's a huge piece of their day then it's been taken care of. That's a huge relief. So it is being supported and will continue to be supported.
It's 8:42.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Assistant Chief Brian Stevens from Eureka Police. Brian, the formal training that now cops have, not before they sign on, but on the ongoing training, how different is that now from what it was, pick a date?
Sure. So our basic PSP training, our perishable skills training, is 24 hours every 2 years. And post the Peace Officer Standards and Training Commission sets what those 24 hours have to be.
So you guys don't have the opportunity, so if you wanted to deal with mental health specifically, you can't steer it into that direction?
We absolutely can do our own training. But when it comes to the standardized, what the state requires every year is this every 2 years is 24 hours of training. And that training has to do with bias policing, de-escalation, intervention, defensive tactics, firearms, driving, and like communication, I think, is the other one. So there's
quite a few.
So
you get about an hour and a half in each topic?
Well, you get like 4 hours, basically, okay. Is what you get, something to that extent. So, and we try to knock that out. College Rebels has been good of putting on some of those classes. We have in-house instructors that have been certified by post and programs. So like our firearms, defensive tactics, things we can do in-house. But then there's other trainings, both by the state that we're required to do, being like domestic violence training, pursuit training every year. I know the bias policing one is put on. So then we have other trainings that we're required to do outside of that 24 that we have to meet mandates on. And then as new legislation comes out, new policies come out, we send those out to the officers. So there's constantly this change of information they need to be retrained on. And then at the beginning of every year, we have about 12, 15 policies that we send out. And these are our primary, like, most important, we think, that you're going to run into the most. Please reread these, sign off on
them. So it's like your top 10.
Exactly. You know, foot pursuits, firearms, vehicle pursuit, things that liability-wise are some, and for officer safety, some of the most dangerous things we deal with.
And probably the most common.
It is, yeah.
I would think also. So as the COVID stuff is now being pulled back or gotten rid of, has that given you guys and gals a lot more flexibility on how to do the job, or has it made it a little bit more convoluted?
The job really never changed. The jail is more open now. We can book more people. They're still dealing with a COVID outbreak, and last I heard, and some, doing some upgrades and things like that. So that affects it. That was probably one of the biggest pieces was that. But as far as the job goes, the job didn't change. The calls never changed what they were. How we had to deal with them really didn't change, other than our personal safety we had to take into account.
Oh, so the protocols didn't change much? Or procedures, I guess.
No, I mean, just on how you responded to them. You had to wear a mask. You know, if they know they were positive, we had goggles and gloves. You know, we try to do that kind of things to keep our people from coming down with COVID during that time, because we couldn't afford to have staffing off work. So
yeah, if you're running light, you don't want to lose more. Yeah.
So we made some of those changes. But as far as how we dealt with a domestic violence call or shots fired call or a petty theft at a store, none of our internal procedures as far as how we handle the crimes changed.
Are you seeing any kind of a change in community interest, I guess, or by the kids, for careers in law enforcement? And with some of the stuff that's going on, and there seems to be a swing on the national media now coming a little bit more pro-cop. I don't know if that's just because I'm wearing blue today or what the situation is, but it doesn't seem like it's as nasty as what it has been.
I would agree. I think that pendulum has swung back a little bit the other way. It's typical you see in the history of society. The pendulum will swing based on national events that take place. I think it's swinging back more to a more neutral, maybe even a more favorable in law enforcement view right now. And I think you will start to see that change. Unfortunately, staffing or recruiting across the country is just taking a hit after the last 3 or 4 years.
Why do I want behind?
Yeah. Why do I want to be a cop if I got to do X, Y, and Z? And the things people see in the media. The media really plays into the mindset of those out there that may seek out a career in law enforcement. One thing that did change, and I think one thing we can do in the future that COVID changed, was we couldn't do our Explorer programs anymore. Schools were not in session. We gained a lot of good officers, a lot of good staff from Explorer programs. Every agency does. I think if we could look at possibly like a countywide Explorer program to include all the schools, some type of internal program,
that makes sense.
We can groom kids. And when I say groom, I mean keep them on the right path to be in law enforcement, get them the right training, education, and experiences.
Yeah, I think educate is the word you want.
Yeah, to get them to where they really can tell if this is, I want to be a cop, I want to be a dispatcher, I want to work in evidence, I want to
see the variety that is there.
Yeah. But so many people get out of that path of what they need to do to set themselves up to be successful in law enforcement because of marijuana. I mean, there's still laws around that when it comes to policing and regulations. So,
even in California?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. See you everybody tomorrow.